Welcome to Democratically 2020, the podcast all about the politics, policies, and personalities of the 2020 US election. And welcome to this special DNC convention wrap-up edition of Democratically 2020. I'm your host, Karen Robinson. In just a minute, we're going to speak to a delegate at the convention about what the experience of attending a virtual convention was like, including attending the caucus meetings and all the kind of non-prime time conversations that Democrats have been having over the course of the week. But first, I just want to reflect a little bit on Joe Biden's speech on the final night of the convention. And now that I've had a couple days to let the convention sort of settle, my thoughts on the convention overall. So first of all, I think Joe Biden's speech, I thought it was a very good speech. I thought it was one of the better speeches I've ever seen Biden deliver. He seemed really comfortable. He seemed really relaxed. I was very struck by the fact that although with Kamala Harris, who gave, I thought, also an excellent speech, she seemed and felt very alone on that stage, and I was very aware of it, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It really pulled home the kind of trauma that the virus has imposed on Americans. Joe didn't seem particularly alone. He just felt very comfortable, very natural. He had a very conversational style. You could feel like as if he was just chatting at the bar. It felt like there were other people in the room, as it didn't so much for Kamala, at least in my perception. Thematically, the speech was bang on with the message that Biden has been running on since the beginning of the primary, and why not? It's an effective message. He talks about being on the side of the light against the darkness, which in normal times I would say is a little bit too black and white and Star Wars-y, but you know what? I think he nailed it. That's pretty much where we are, so fair enough. He talked about he talked in his usual Scranton Joe way about kind of, the dignity of work. He spoke about his own upbringing and the values that he was raised with. Always a compelling message. I think people that really relate to it. I thought it was a good speech. I thought he should be very pleased with it. And of course, it helps that the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself have been spending the last few weeks and months making it as easy as possible for Biden to deliver a good speech by lowering expectations. Trump supporters will have been convinced by their leader that Joe Biden is somehow out to lunch, that he's, incapable of delivering a coherent sentence. So a compelling, well-articulated, well-delivered speech like that will have blown their minds, and I'm here for that. So thinking about the convention overall, I never know what to say about this, because I think about all the people who spoke and under the most difficult circumstances, and the cumulative effect of all of it, and I always feel this, is that the Democratic Party as a collection of people, as an amalgam of one side of the argument, I just think it's an exceptional group of people. I think about the people on that stage, the work that they've done, the lives that they've lived, lots of different ways of articulating the American story, but I thought all of them very compelling, very admirable, very dignified. It was a somber convention. And I think actually all the better for it. I think had there been an audience on stage, there might have been a temptation for some hooting and hollering and some cheap shot applause lines against Trump. And I think that's where the country is. So I think it was good that we left that out. I have to be honest, though, the speech that has really stayed with me is President Obama's speech that he gave, especially when he talked about, with his usual kind of eloquent urgency. But when he talked about the people before us who had every right to give up on democracy, slaves and immigrants who were denied their rights, Native Americans, and how somehow or other they just never gave up on this country, and therefore we can't either. It was kind of the shot in the arm that I needed. Not that I was in any way in danger of giving up, but it's helpful to remember that this is not, You know, although the country as a whole may have never faced such an extraordinarily malicious and malignant president, individual Americans have overcome much similarly terrible and worse struggles over time, and they have done it not without complaint and not without suffering, but they have done it, and so I think we can too. So I think it was good for us to have that conversation. It was good for us to have this convention. I think it met the moment. It was well produced. I think huge credit to the team who pulled it together. Honestly, just from a governing point of view, if we're going to run the country under difficult circumstances as well as we ran that convention, I think that speaks well for us. The ability to deliver a complex task in a short time frame under difficult circumstances, hey, that has a thing or two to do with governing the country. So I think Americans can feel glad about that. Overall, I thought it was an exceptionally strong week. But the reason I say in some ways I never quite know what to say about these things is because I always find this group of people impressive. I really do. I don't understand the mindset in the first place of the Trump voter who looks at what Democrats have to say and looks at Donald Trump as in 2016 and thinks, maybe I'll go for the other guy. There's just... I'm obviously out of touch with some of the voters we're trying to reach here because I don't see it. I don't see what they see. I cannot see the thing, not just in Trump himself, but in the entire 21st century Republican governing agenda, which does not have a positive case to make for how we can make American life better. It's all about cutting taxes for the wealthy. It's all about social grievance. I don't see anything in there to admire or like. And I say this as somebody who's always been a Democrat, but who has grown up engaging with a tradition of conservative thought that I used to be able to disagree with, but believe was a credible tradition. And I no longer believe that. So I expect that we'll see a festival of grievance and misery in Trump's convention next week. I do not plan on doing daily convention watches next week because why should I suffer anymore? But I will do a wrap-up episode next week of the Republican convention and we can just sigh and lament the option of America once had two viable political parties and now it has one white nationalist, pro-violence, anti-citizen group of, well, it's a mob, basically. And then we've got the Democrats. So vote Democrat, folks. So with that said, I thought it would be worth checking in with my friend David Wenk, who is a convention delegate. He's actually an alternate delegate, because it's worth remembering that as well as the speeches that happen overnight, there's also a whole program of activity that's taking place, caucus meetings and platform meetings and so forth. And David has attended a whole bunch of those. So we're going to check in with him and see what his week was like. So I am here with David Wenk, my friend and fellow Democrat abroad. David is the vice chair of Democrats Abroad UK, and he was this week a convention delegate alternate for Bernie Sanders. David, Bernie Sanders obviously won the Democrats Abroad convention convincingly, even though he didn't win the overall election. How did it feel for you this week as a Sanders delegate at the convention?
Well, good morning, Karen. It's been a learning experience all around because, first of all, this is my first convention, and my first convention is an unconventional convention. So I didn't know exactly what to expect going in, and even the people I spoke to who had been to conventions in the past didn't have a lot of information to impart that was necessarily relevant to what we were going to be experiencing this week. How did I feel? I thought. Look, I've known for quite some time that that my candidate will not be the chosen one, and so I've had sufficient time to get used to that fact. And also, the bottom line here is we just need to win the White House this year, and that's actually brought the party together in ways that it hadn't in 2016.
Yeah, I mean, that is my impression, is that there's remarkable unity and unity of purpose and unity of ambition to win the election across the party. Biden has done a lot to try and bring different groups in the party together. There was a real diversity of speakers this week. I'm curious, looking back on it now that you've had some sleep, poor David, you've been up half the night trying to keep up with it all. Now that you've had some sleep, what were the moments in the convention that stood out? Did you have any highlights? What do you think you'll remember going forward?
Yeah, well, in general, I would divide the convention into two large ingredients, and one of those ingredients was, of course, the main floor show each night, which. To my eye was like an extended Oscars, really, and the other part was comprised of various caucus and group meetings earlier in the day, still late in the day for us here in the UK, but things would kick off with a breakfast. Usually timed, at breakfast time or in Milwaukee time, which would be something like midday or early afternoon for us here in the UK.
So a breakfast lunch.
Those were interesting. And then they were followed by these caucus meetings that actually I found to be, frankly, a bit more interesting than the evening, mainly because... it was our chance to hear from regular working Americans and the problems that they faced, and not just it wasn't just the Labor Council. There were there was the Black Caucus meetings, the Rural Caucus meetings. There were a whole host of various groups coming together in that period before the main evening show.
So I would love to hear more about those caucus meetings. Now, first of all, the caucus meetings theoretically were open to everyone this year, weren't they? I mean, anyone could have dialed into them if they had so chosen. Is that right?
Yeah, and that was. I mean, of course, I want to see an open convention, but for some of the delegates, it was rather annoying that there was no difference in level of access between the public and the delegates, and. We wanted to see the ability to converse alongside the conversation that was happening on screen, as delegates. However, the entire public was thrown into the chat box there, and that led to great disruption. Invariably, what would happen if a caucus meeting had a chat facility was in a matter of a few minutes, it would become overwhelmed with a load of not terribly helpful shouting from all and sundry, when in fact a lot of the elected delegates were looking forward to having a conversation, a meaningful conversation in that space.
Yeah.
And that was not really afforded to us, given the way in which it was run by the Democratic National Convention Committee. Now, that said, I know they're running with this and trying to figure out how to pull together a virtual convention with no experience beforehand, but I do feel it could have been a bit more responsive to some of the comments that were being emailed over to their public engagement line. So,
well, it's a really interesting example of the a very common, I think, conflict in politics, or like a tension in politics between, you know, you want to open things up, as you say, ideally you'd love everyone to participate and see what's happening within our caucuses and groups. And then on the other hand, you have the, well, you also need to do the work. And it sounds like what we're talking about here is a credentialing problem that, you know, we went from one extreme to the other, from, you know, a relatively closed room to almost a room so open that you couldn't have a conversation within it. It's a real challenge.
I don't know whether that was down to a degree of inexperience in running such rooms. Funnily enough, at Democrats Abroad, we have quite a bit of experience of doing things remotely, just by virtue of how widely dispersed we are and how much experience we have in having run remote meetings. But from our point of view, as Democrats Abroad, it was extremely frustrating because we could see some of the problems that we already, years ago, in fact, met the challenge of, and that was it would have been nice if we could have had an experience akin to that there. So.
Well, I guess that's something I could just shout out as a general rule to the Democratic Party. Hey guys, we've done this. All the things you're trying to do now, voting by mail, running virtual meetings, we've been doing this for a year. So we're here if you want some advice.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But so thinking about the substance of the meetings, what kinds of topics were discussed at, for example, the Black Caucus meeting? What was on the minds of the participants?
Yeah, well, these meetings were fairly wide ranging and would cover various topics facing African Americans in America at the moment. The thing I was thinking of just now was the Labor Council meeting. Jumping to that for a second, there was one issue that I remember that stuck with me. There was the we were treated to like this cavalcade of various union workers, union representatives, and one was a woman who was involved in the flight attendants union. And talking about the recent money that came out of the coronavirus bailout, and the fact that when the airlines are concerned, they were they're receiving a certain amount of funding from the government during this period, but the problem is that a lot of it isn't going down to the staff who are needing it most. This is actually something to do with I think a mismanagement in the airline industry of having when doing well in the past, the airlines had not invested in their own infrastructure and staff and fleet. They'd simply done stock buybacks and things like this.
Right.
So there was talk in that meeting of how you know, we need to see legislation that puts a stop to that kind of behavior that encourages large corporations to be responsible to themselves in a way that would allow them to continue running when hit with crises like this. But the fact is that greed at the top does play a big part in corporate America, and that's that doesn't
you shock necessarily, me, David.
Yes. So at any rate, there were. I'm suffering from convention fatigue, and there were just so much going on, and we were dipping into so many different rooms that I don't have my notes in front of me for everything. But that said, I did notice that a lot of the caucus meetings do seem to still be online on the Dem convention site. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested in going to see them, that's demconvention.com. And if you click on, I believe it is schedule, you'll see each day's schedule. Now, I don't know how long they're going to keep that like that. And I haven't found these caucus meetings in the YouTube stream yet. They may be there hiding somewhere. I would encourage you to go and have your audience to go and have a look at those while they're still up. There is, in fact, a YouTube channel for the Democratic National Convention as well, which definitely has a lot of the top line speeches featured, and the full running schedule for each evening. But do have a look around on that channel for other material, because some of that other material is quite interesting.
Great. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. So then that's kind of, let's call that the daytime program. Some really substantive conversation about policies and issues, specific caucuses talking about the issues that are relevant to them. And then there was the evening program, as you rightly said, that was kind of more of an Oscar ceremony. And it was a very slickly produced cavalcade of Democratic superstars and some regular voters making their case. Mm-hmm. What did you make of that? Were there any speeches or speakers that stood out for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, it started off with the fairly early on. We had the roll call, which actually I think it was a bit like a Eurovision tour of America in a way.
that was night two, I think.
Yeah. That was fun. I appreciated more the second time around that I saw it, because I did a rewatch with some friends who hadn't seen it. We had a tour of America, each state by state, territory by territory, with a few representatives Democratic Party representatives from each state. That was a nice reminder of how diverse we are, and that was a good way to kick off night two. Speech-wise, I thought there were some really excellent speeches in there. Obviously, Obama did extremely well. I was following some of the progressive sites that usually critique critique Obama quite critically, but even like, for example, TYT thought he did that was one of the speeches of his lifetime. So that was actually I think very, very important to have strong speeches towards the end. And I was very happy with Biden's speech. It was I thought it showed him to have the ability to carry us forward and to unite us. I think that was important to see.
Yeah, I mean, Biden's speech, I've only just managed to catch up with it myself because I've been traveling here. I'm somewhere in the middle of North Wales. But watching it back last night and this morning, I thought it was a really, really lovely speech. It was, it did a nice job of combining the seriousness of the moment with giving you kind of a reinforcement of who Biden is as a person, as a politician. But he really just conveyed to me a real sense of understanding the seriousness of the moment and the threat to our democracy. And I was glad to see that. It was also just well delivered, well presented. Yeah. I think, you know, he hasn't always been the best speaker on the campaign trail. So I think he's it's one of the things I always think about a Democratic primary is that, you know, it's good to have them, not only because of internal competition in the party, but also because I feel like, honestly, it makes our candidates better when they compete. And I think Joe Biden has gotten better from all the challenges he's had in the campaign trail. What were your thoughts on mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I don't see how you can fail to hone your speaking skills after that hugely long series of debates that we went through. Here in the UK, we've been showing quite a number of them in our Democrats Abroad UK Country Committee, and they seem to go on forever. So I do think that does. I mean, also Biden's campaign team will be, you know, analyzing the strengths of the other speeches and taking from the best of other speakers as well, I think. And you did we did see a much tighter and more convincing speech from Biden this week than we have in the past, I suppose. But at any rate, I thought it was it came across as very genuine and delivered with a strength of purpose. So
yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. So one of the major themes that was undercurring underneath the radar and often on the speaker platforms throughout the convention was a very difficult conversation that we're having about protecting America's right to vote. And of course, there have been hearings with DeJoy of the Postal Service, where he's, you know, being called up hard for some of his actions that might undermine the integrity of our postal ballots. From the delegates that you spoke to, how much concern did you hear from them about whether the election will be as free and fair as it ought to be, and whether participation will be as widespread and welcoming to all Americans as we would hope?
Well, I think there's a universal concern there, and I think it was pressure from the public and delegates in the last week that has forced Congress to pull some of those hearings up from September when they were going to have them. I think there's something happening on the 24th. I believe. I don't know whether that timetable is still correct, but I mean, it's one thing to suspend to dismantling the U.S. Postal Service, but it's another thing to put it back to where it needs
to be.
Yeah, I mean, the DeJoy does seem to be, you know, refusing to reinstate the 117 sorting machines that have been taken out in quite strategic areas. I think California lost quite a number, and interestingly, going back to the convention, the various state committees had hangout rooms that you could go and join at certain times. And I spent a bit of time in California's, and they were, oh my goodness, they were so, they're extremely engaged and extremely pissed off. So, yeah, I don't... To answer your question about, you know, give it to me again.
I think you've answered it. It sounds like there is a lot of seriousness of purpose that came across in the convention about vote by mail and voting in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all share this kind of feeling of dread of that. You know, are we going to be able to achieve enough to counteract these voter suppression tactics? That's the thing, is it's just so important that we all turn out in decisive numbers, because we're going to need that to counter the the disenfranchisement on so many different fronts that's coming at us. So.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think I can pretty much wrap things up before we go. So we talked about your highlights of the week. Were there any sort of surprises or disappointments? Was there anything that you were hoping to see that you didn't see from the week or that you kind of saw that you were surprised to see?
Let's see. Let me see if I can start with a positive here. yeah. Well, I mean, I am a Bernie delegate. I was really happy to see Bernie speak and to speak so forcefully for unity. I mean, the audience inside the convention, the Sanders delegates there are is a bit different from the wider Sanders base, and yeah. It was really important, I think, for Bernie to say that publicly to the wider audience, because of course we want to push for more progressive policies, but we have to have Biden and Harris in the White House first. That's a given. So right now the game is slightly altered from what the game was earlier in the primary season, and the game will return to that that agenda later on once we get Biden and Harris in. Now the stood out for me as a surprise. I suppose I wasn't expecting to find the caucus meetings as engaging as they were. Yeah. So that's true. Yeah. But yeah.
So there you go. So everyone can, you've still got the chance to go in and tune in and see some of those caucus check conversations. Those out.
Yeah. Some are more interesting than others. So just have a, you know, just whip through a few. That's the trouble. There's so many hours of programming in here that, you could spend another week or more watching it, but definitely there are bits and pieces in there that are well worth a watch. So.
Great. David Wendt, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to talk to you. And listen, get some sleep, rest up, get back onto a regular schedule.
Thank you. Yes, I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah.
Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
And that's it. As always, you can reach me on Twitter. I'm at KarinJR, KarinJR. I would love to hear from you, and especially to hear what you thought of the convention. What speeches were the highlights for you? What really stood out? What were you surprised by? What are you dreading in next week's Republican convention? If you have not yet registered to vote or requested your absentee ballot, oh, please do it. Please, 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 please. I don't know how many times I can beg you. You know, we all got to do it this year, every year. And actually, not just in presidential years, but in midterm election cycles, in local elections. Request your ballot. Make sure you get ready to vote. That website is votefromabroad.org if you're an American abroad, like myself, and vote.org if you're back in the U.S. As always, I should let you know this podcast is not affiliated with or endorsed by any other organization or entity. It's just little old me with my thoughts, and I'm glad that you spent the time to listen to them. I'll speak to you next week.